this thing. No title again?
Is it rolling, Bob?
Just play on in the background there. That is a song I heard for the first time today, called Seven Roads by a group called Fanny. Now, I had never heard of Fanny. Fanny was out in the early 70s. This is from their first album called Fanny. A couple of sisters and some others. Now, you'll hear all about it, as I did, if you listen to Jason, Alien CG, and that Oliver Rockslide guy, when they do In Your Ear Holes. And today, that was Jason's choice. And boy, I did my walk today, my extended walk here, where I am now in Thompson Park, but leaving the park, following the hydro corridor. And I went through the first, well, four of their albums. Really a fine group, and it's just kind of funny, like David Bowie know them and others, you know, at that time they apparently their live shows were great, and I had never heard of them. They were, I guess, originally from the Philippines. So I was saying I'm hearing a little of the Beatles, I'm hearing a little Boney M, I'm hearing a little Supremes, I'm hearing lots of other influences, but really, as was said on the In Your Ear Holes podcast, great musicians, and boy, some fine, fine music. So that was my that was the highlight for today's walk. When I take a walk, as you know, I'm counting my steps. How many did we get today? Let's just see. Oh, well, we're right up there. Well, I could probably do it on my watch, but anyway, it's important for me to know, you know, God, come on, where are we, fitness, let's see, ooh, I hit over 5,000 steps, good, that's 3.6 kilometers approximately, so we're doing okay, because the last couple of days, the weather's been lousy, and I had not been walking, and I was feeling a little bad about it, windy. A lot of clouds, but when the clouds blow away, the sun is just fabulous, you know, as always. And, yeah. So, this is yours truly, the Scarborough Dude. This is, I'm coming back to you after that absolutely fabulous camping weekend at Rondeau Provincial Park. You would have heard all about it if you listened to the preceding episode. So, this would be Dixon Jane's number 993. And, yeah, It's Saturday. It's late afternoon, after 4 o'clock. I've just chatted. I was sitting on a bench, and the walker went by. If you're a regular, you know the walker is the guy who spends 3 hours walking in circles around this park, always in the same direction. Good stride, fast pace. And we have little conversations. I finally realized today, I've given up trying to have a real conversation. He can throw words at me. I'll throw words at him, and we go back and forth. Both of us smiling, both of us happy, and that's enough. So I hear a lot of mosque, no mosque today. Mosque, no mosque. Pray at home. Scarborough Town Center. Walking, water, and lots of words come my way. They're not really joined in, a normal sentence-like fashion. And that's okay. He's doing his best. And I say things, good to see you, nice day, yeah, sunshine, yeah, yeah. And that's just fine. Then there's the other guys, they walk in pairs. He's kind of short, and he always has a nice hat, but today was too windy. He had to hold his hat, as I did mine. And we just make a little comment, but we don't really stop to talk at all. And then there's the dog, that wonderful dog I've talked about before, and the man who, and I said both had looked like they've been around the block a few times. And I thought, okay, well, what are the odds of seeing him on this walk? I just pick a random time to come here. It's probably 2:30 or, I don't know, maybe earlier. Am I likely to see him on this path? And sure enough, we met. And I was very happy because it's pretty well every time I come, I meet that man, tall man, short on teeth, missing with the dog who was just this crazy barker. And he's trained him not to bark anymore. So this time I sat and I waited. I was, it was my break time. Could see them coming up the hill towards me. And sure enough, we came up and the dog didn't bark at all. And he told me he had a stroke 2 years ago. And I'd said, well, you can thank this dog. Yes, the doctor took me off the blood pressure medication. I don't need it now. He walked 6 hours a day with that dog. Both of them so happy. And I'm telling you this because it was the happiest exchange. It was just, it was joyful. I felt so good about the love between that man and his dog. I mean, later, after they left, I thought, oh, my God. If either of them, something happened to either one of them, the dog or the man, it would just be devastating. But right now, it's just such a beautiful thing, and he's so proud of that dog. And as soon as he leaves, I even say, good dog, good boy. And he's just clearly, and at the beginning, when we first met, the dog was just nonstop barking, snapping, pulling at the leash. And finally, one day he exerted his control and said, no more. And now the dog obeys, and they're both happier for it. Simple things in life, I think I ended my last podcast. If you can't enjoy the little simple things in life, you're in trouble. I mean, because it ain't the possessions that are going to make you happy. Anyway, that's what it's like walking through Thompson Park here. It's a place where I have connections now. It's a just a familiar, wonderful thing. Okay, so I know you're expecting me to read you something. I'm on the last chapter of a book, Awakening to Your Life's Purpose, by Eckhart Tolle, of course, and then I'll start on the other one. There's a nice chapter here. You know what's coming, so pay attention. Get your listening ears on, okay? Get your listening ears on. The subtitle in this, The Discovery of Inner Space, the subtitle is lose yourself to find yourself. And a lot of this is about putting the brakes on your ego and all the needs of your ego and all the words that get in your head and demand, you know, are in search of something, this recognition and so on. And this is sort of just let go of that when you can. And he talks about some of the things that people do. And I'm guilty of, I think, every one of these. I'm going to read them out to you because, and the reason I'm doing this is because I think you, the listener, you're guilty of these too. And it would be a good lesson to say, oh, do I do that? Do I really do that? I don't know if I do that. Come on, do I really do that? Here are some ways in which people unconsciously try to emphasize their form identity. Now, by form identity means your sense of self, this personality you've created and all its needs, and as opposed to the inner core that is the real you, this thing that that doesn't die. Okay? So here are some ways in which people unconsciously try to emphasize their form identity. If you're alert enough, you may be able to detect some of these unconscious patterns within yourself. And then he goes on, colon, demanding recognition for something you did and getting angry or upset if you don't get it. Okay. Trying to get attention by talking about your problems, the story of your illness, or making a scene. Giving your opinion when nobody has asked for it, and it makes no difference to the situation. Being more concerned with how the other person sees you than with the other person, which is to say, using other people for egoic reflection or as ego enhancers, right? Putting yourself so that they'll make you look good. That's what you're working on. Trying to make an impression on others through possessions, knowledge, good looks, status, physical strength, and so on. Okay, I don't do too many of those, but yeah, no, I try to make an impression by saying, hey, I know about the Beats. Bringing about temporary ego inflation through angry reaction against something or someone. Taking things personally, feeling offended. Making yourself right and others wrong through futile mental or verbal complaining. Wanting to be seen or to appear important. Guilty! Anyway, once you have detected such a pattern within yourself, I suggest that you conduct an experiment. Find out what it feels like and what happens if you let go of the pattern. Just drop it and see what happens. And I'm enough aware of that that I can do it. If I'm sitting in the bar, say it's the only cafe and I don't need to be the center of attention, I can just let go of it. Let others open the space, have their say. John will still come out and have coffee with me. And John is, you know, an introvert who tires quickly and has not much patience for the extroverts who dominate conversations. And I don't dominate. Certainly not as much as I used to. I'll put it that way, you know. But anyway, that's all I want to share with you right now. This is just an opener. I wanted to start it with a song from from a new group I discovered, and I'm just shocked that I never heard of them. From Fanny was the group. All right, so we're going to leave it at that. I'm going to get home. Maybe do barbecue. I've been barbecuing the past few nights. It's been fun. We've got a fridge full of food we got to consume. And all is well in my little world. So I hope it is in yours. It is Saturday, April 13th. And yeah, I'm going to see my friend Yasser soon. That's coming up. Yeah, that's always something. Always a story there to hear. All right, Scarborough Dude, bye for now.
picture yourself as you lean on the port rail, tossing away your last cigarette. Picture your finger pushing the doorbell. Picture the skull and crossbones on the doorman. Picture the Casbah, picture Japan, picture your kid with his hand on the trigger, picture prosthetics in Afghanistan. Picture a courthouse with no fucking laws. Picture a cat house with no fucking whores. Picture a shit house with no fucking dreams. Picture a leader with no fucking dreams.
Okay, yeah. Enough of that picturing. That is, of course, I'm sure many of my listeners would know that that was Roger Waters. But from a CD, or a collection of songs... I gotta turn it down a bit. It's a bit overpowering, as Waters often is. Is this the life we really want? Something I've never heard of, didn't know about at all. It's an album from 2017. So, there you go. A lot of discovering new stuff. There was Fanny yesterday. Today is Sunday, by the way. It's a beautiful day. I've had my little walk here close to my house on this stretch of sort of a little bit of a straight strip of a park lane that a lot of people use to walk their dogs. It's not very picturesque, although there were some daffodils that were worth stopping to look at. sorry. Last night I got a text message from my friend Peter Cox. I think he'd been into the wine, and he was listening to Roger Waters' Radio Chaos, is that it? Which I hadn't known either. You know, it's amazing. For myself, who always considered myself a huge Pink Floyd fan, I guess I dropped off. You know, there's a lot of stuff that I just haven't listened to, and so it's kind of fun to discover. I will spend some time listening to this, but not while I'm talking to you, because this is something we just gotta park for a while and come back to later. Yeah, Sunday, a great start to the day of just a leisurely start. You chill, you read a little, you avoid as much news as possible. There was a lot of, a big brouhaha over after Israel killed some Iranian generals, and Iran, to save face, had to fire bombs at Israel. Most of them, with the help of British and Americans, were shot down before they landed. Only a few did. Now, of course, it'll be Israel's turn to seek revenge on the revenge. And I had CNN on for a while, and it's like they were salivating. You know, Wolf Blitzer and others have just... they're just looking for more, bigger news, more devastation, scarier stuff, because that's what, you know, gets eyeballs and ears on their show tuned in to, oh my God, what next? What's going to happen? And it's sad. They seem to thrive on it, but we're going to park that. We're not going to talk about that on this fucking show. Sorry, no, I mean that. We're not going to talk about that fucking stuff on this wonderful, laid-back, chilled show. Ha! How could that be if I started with Roger Waters? Gosh, yeah, that's all wrong, isn't it? Let's see if we can tidy this up a bit. I had another message from another friend, Rob Balser in Thailand. saying, you know, what am I going to do for celebrating my thousandth episode? You know, and I answered back, I've already had 1,000 episodes. This is number 993, but I know with the number of episodes that I relabeled A and B or parts 1 and 2 and all that, I've put out over 1,000 podcasts, I'm sure. Easily at 1,000 hours of podcasting. And I don't feel any interest or desire at all in making any big deal out of it, even though it probably sounds like that's all I've been doing for the past few months. No, not really. I've been wondering, well, what should I do? And I'm still thinking of it as an excuse that if I could fill the time creatively by not podcasting, by taking on another creative endeavor, great, that's what I'll do. I have the feeling it'll be back to business as usual. And, you know, we'll just carry on. So, again, I won't know till we're there. But, no, I do not want, oh, this is going to be a special episode. Oh, my God, I've hit number 1,000. What are we going to do? No. It'll be just like this. Something coming from the present moment. So, what do I have to share? It's very clear. My mind, my memory for sure is just shot to shit. And has been for a long time. I'm very pleased that my brain still functions when I do Wordle, Quirtle connections and I can get it done. I can solve a crossword puzzle. That's a real thrill to me that those things are still possible. And so the brain, you know, parts of it are still functioning. But memory has always been a problem for me, and it is, it's just so much worse than ever. But the reading I'm doing, as I finish off, I'm down to less than 20 pages left in Eckhart Tolle's A New Earth, Awakening to Your Life's Purpose. I can't believe, well, I can believe, because I'm telling you, how clearly I'm understanding what he's writing. It's as if it's, wow, he just put this in the language that works perfectly for me. It really, really has. Everything I read. Now, mind you, I read and I reread and I reread. Like this chapter, I think I've already finished this book. When I'm reading it now, like with fresh eyes and thinking, ah, okay, now I get that. I'm thrilled about that. I'm thrilled that at this time in my life, I found a book that doesn't just resonate, but speaks to me clearly in a way that I'll understand and incorporate into my life. That's what's happening. So let me just share a little more of that. I know. That's all we seem to do. I suppose, I don't know if I want to apologize. No, I don't. No. No, I don't want to apologize. There's nothing to apologize for. This is what I want to do now, right? This is mine. It's my game. It's my toy. It's my time. And yes, I'm offering to share it with some of you, but I need to talk about things that I'm connecting with. I shared a little bit with Lil on Life this morning, this little statement. You cannot become successful. You can only be successful. Now, you can hear that as just a cliche, oh, that's something I put on a wall poster and dismiss. And that's fine. But to me, the message is, no, it's all about, again, living in the present moment. Successful to become successful means the future, and the future isn't real. There's only this present now, this ever-changing now that is real. And it is continually, I mean, the message of the book, I mean, page upon page is about that. Recognizing the difference between the past and future, which exist in your head only, and are sort of governed by the ego, this thing that wants, you know, reassurance and creates its own needs. And the attempt to put that aside, to take control away from the ego and not let it dictate you, but let yourself be and let this being govern you, and recognize the ego for what it is, this thing that's a construct. Your entire life journey ultimately consists of the step you are taking at this moment. This step is primary. The destination is secondary. I'll repeat. Your entire life journey ultimately consists of the step you are taking at this moment. This is all that matters. Who you are now, what you're doing now. And you can ask, well, Ken, what are you doing now? Well, I'm trying very hard to share, and I'm trying very hard to understand. And I think those are noble causes, and they don't necessarily involve me inflating my ego and saying, hey, look what I know. No. I hope some of you can join in this journey, or, you know, clearly find your own path, or at least recognize the importance of continuing to think and try and understand. When you become comfortable with uncertainty, infinite possibilities open up in your life. When you become comfortable with uncertainty, infinite possibilities open up in your life. If uncertainty is unacceptable to you, it turns into fear, this uncertainty. If it is perfectly acceptable, it turns into increased aliveness, alertness, and creativity. If you can accept the uncertainty that is life, the not being able to control and hold on to. And once you accept that, and you do what I did when I bought that one-way ticket to Japan, you join the dance, join the cosmic dance. A lot of new possibilities open up. One more thing. Awakening is a shift in consciousness in which thinking and awareness separate. It's a process, not an event. So instead of being in charge of your life, thinking becomes the servant of awareness. You want your thinking to be serving your inner purpose, your true needs. There is nothing you can do about awakening. Whatever you do will be the ego trying to add awakening or enlightenment to itself as its most prized possession. Perhaps I already shared this with you. And thereby making itself more important and bigger. Instead of an awakening, you add the concept of awakening to your mind, or the mental image of what an awakened or enlightened person is like, and then try to live up to that image. Living up to an image that you have of yourself or that other people have of you is inauthentic living, another unconscious role the ego plays. I guess perhaps I'm missing the mark here by finding these quotes, copying them into my notes, reading them aloud to you, and thinking this is communicating. And it's silly because really what I've been saying all along is for every bit of wisdom, it has to be the right time for you. You have to be receptive. You have to be in the position to receive that and want to receive that. And I have the feeling a great many people are listening to this just out of habit. It's just Ken yammering on and not really tuned in, because it's not the time to be tuned into this. So we'll go back to Roger Waters and we're going to end there. Every time I've had the food, even folks from Waterloo, the old, the young, toothless hags, super bulls, actors, bags, bleeding hearts, football stars, men in bars, washer women, tailors, tarts, brothers, grandpas, uncles, aunts, friends, relations, hugs, trunks.
Assailant who tried to kill you left a bag of knives right near the stage.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you've asked yourself, I didn't need like a whole bag of knives. Like, wasn't one good knife like sufficient? But the larger question is, how did he manage to get that bag of knives through security? And the answer is there was no security.
There was no security.
Which is just remarkable to me. I mean, I'm sure the people who set this up feel extraordinarily guilty and bad and everything. So
yeah, I think they're very embarrassed, and I think since the attack on me, they have now instituted the kind of security precautions that, had they been in place on that day, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Right, but like, I mean, you're Salman Rushdie, even though the fatwa was at that time 33 years in the past, and even though you were living your life, you know, normally,
yeah,
as if there was, you know, never a death threat against you. Nevertheless, you're Salman Rushdie.
It might have been a good idea to have one or two people around.
Yeah. Hmm. And how are you dealing with that? I mean, if it was me, I would just be just choking on my anger.
Well, one of the things that I think has been very strange for me is that the emotion that I haven't really had in the aftermath of all this is anger. And it's as if something in my head tells me that anger would be a way of being stuck in the moment. You know, it would be a way of not being able to get past it. And so I don't have anger. I mean, if somewhere deep down I am pretty furious with various people, notably the gentleman with the knife. But it doesn't seem productive to me to linger on anger. And I think what happened in Chautauqua is that, you know, it's a very innocent kind of place. It's green and leafy and sweet and with an older retiree kind of residence in the neighborhood. And the people who come tend to be older as well, and liberal and steeped in a long tradition of openness and discussion. And I just don't think they ever thought that something like this could happen on their turf.
All right, we need to take another short break here, so let me reintroduce you. If you're just joining us, my guest is Salman Rushdie, and his new memoir is called Knife, Meditations After an Attempted Murder. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air.
Okay, so I wanted to share that. It's just a wonderful interview. I saw him on television. CBC interviewed him, too. I've got my name on the waiting list for his book, Knife. What an amazing artist, writer, man. And, by God, you know, all because he wrote a book called The Satanic Verses, and somebody, the Ayatollah, said, oh, that's disrespectful of Islam. Let's kill him, okay? That's what God wants. That's what our God wants. Kill him for insulting our prophet. Fuck you. Anyway. he is forgiving. He has the bigger picture. He was saying earlier on that, I mean, people expected him to die from his wounds. I mean, lost the use of an arm, his eye, and it was touch and go. Almost miraculous, even though he doesn't believe in miracles, that he's able to resume life and counts it as a bonus every day that he's been given this other chance. So he's feeling gratitude. Every day is a blessing, which is a wonderful way to take all of this. Very interesting that two nights before he had a dream that he was in an arena kind of thing, like a coliseum, and was being attacked by somebody with a spear, and he was rolling around trying to avoid the thrust of the spear, and his wife woke him up, and he described the dream and said, I don't want to go. In 2 days, I've got to go to this kind of forum place where he's going to be in an amphitheater. I don't want to go. But then later realized it was a dream, and he went anyway. But anyway, all of that you could hear if you listen to the podcast yourself. Another one of the great heroes of our day, Salman Rushdie. What else have we got to talk about? I'm at Rosetta McLean Gardens. I'm still sitting in my car because I wanted to play that clip. And I'm soon going to put on my coat, get out my walker, and take a walk along the water's edge here, overlooking Lake Ontario. And maybe do a couple of laps just to get in some walking. It's an overcast, kind of cold day. A little short spell of beautiful, sunny, warm days is over for now. But that's all right. I see I don't know if these are crocuses. Oh, daffodils are out in full bloom. One of the purple ones. Are those crocuses or irises? I don't know. I am, as I've mentioned before, appallingly ignorant when it comes to just general knowledge. I'll chalk it up to a learning disability, but you know, that's just an excuse. But things just don't stay in my head. And I'm always, as you know, in dreamland. I'm somewhere else. I remember taking a walk in Japan through a park, and somebody commented on one of the trees and asked me about it, and I didn't know. And he told me to my face, you're very ignorant. Surprisingly, how ignorant you are. I was a little surprised at his comment. Okay, hey, thanks for telling it like it is. But I've never forgotten it because it's true. And again, if I could just wind back that clock and go back to school, I have glimpses of things I saw in geography books, in history books, you know, in particular social studies, anything like that. I'd really love to do that again. I want to know, I want to learn, and a little more about science and this and that. And my entire education up until university was just you got to get through. You just got to get to the next grade, do whatever it takes. But, you know, any learning would just be sort of a byproduct of survival. So, yeah, it is yours truly, the Scarborough Dude, winding down this particular podcast. Let's see, do I have... Oh, yes, of course I've got notes. This is episode number 993, as you know. I do have notes. I've been reading... I've got a couple of books. The Cult of Trump, that I felt I had to read. There's a lot of fill in it about cults and so on, but a few interesting things. Something I found quite interesting, it was published in 2019, okay? And near the end, there's a quote, and I'll read it to you. If Trump runs again and is not reelected in 2020, he might claim that the election was rigged. Who knows what he might call on his followers to do in that case? Okay. Now, I was a little suspicious. I thought, okay, this is a reprint. You know, we've already had the 2020, he lost, and we know what happened on storming a Capitol Hill and all of that stuff. But no, probably this guy saw this coming. Hey, he's not going to take losing the way he should. It's not going to go out gracefully, and for sure he didn't. So I'll return that book to the library tomorrow, I think. I'm reading another book that I have with me on, I guess, was it The Future of Terrorism, which is not a pleasant read by any means. And it is kind of scary at how successful the people with the radical Islam views, right, are able, through brutality and through fear and through killing, able to establish what it is they want in certain areas around the planet. Like, their dream is to live the way their prophet, they interpret, wanted them to live. And that's just bloody frightening. And what's frightening, of course, is, oh, God, here we go. You know, the rise of right-wing fanaticism, people living in fear, and so voting, leaning more and more towards the conservative side of things. And, I mean, it's happening here in Canada, Trudeau trying to do the right thing about the environment by carbon taxes and so on. And we'll lose the next election because they'll just type, hey, he's charging you too much money. The gas prices, by the way, went up 14 cents a liter last night. 14 cents a liter. Boy, driving a road trek, that hits pretty damn hard. So my wife called and told me, and so I filled her car up. The road trek had enough gas that it wasn't worth it for, maybe I would have saved a buck. Anyway, that's something we'll deal with. Big news here, big news cast and talk about the great police work that they've arrested many people in a heist at Pearson Airport, that's Toronto, that happened exactly a year ago. A delivery got off a plane from Zurich, Switzerland, containing a lot of foreign currency. $2.5 million in foreign currency, like cash, and 400 kilograms of pure gold. A truck backed up to the facility. It was unloaded from the plane, taken to the storage facility. A truck backed up, showed a piece of paper that said, we're here to take up this particular order. Guy on a forklift loads it onto the truck. The truck drives away. It's gone. So, I mean, that was a huge story. $20 million gone. Of course, they found the truck later, abandoned. One of the people they arrested was a jeweler who was melting down. What they got out of that $20 million in gold and $2.5 million in foreign currencies, what they got back was $430,000 in cash, not even a fraction of what was lost. Well, yeah, a fraction of what was lost. And about $89,000 in gold bangles out of the $20 million worth of gold. What a disgusting thing. And the only way they even began to crack this case was somewhere in the States, the state police arrested a guy for some infraction in his car. And turned out he was wanted on other things. And he had, I think, 66 guns in possession on his way back to unload them in Canada. So this is a part of a huge ring that take the money from the gold, buy guns, send them back to Canada, and kill people. Supply the gangs so they can do more carjackings. It's all, they just... I mean, there's war. There's fundamentalist, you know, waging war in the name of their prophet and their religion. And then there's war, Israel and Gaza and Russia and Ukraine and all those things. You just, it makes you want to cry. And then this crime, which just makes me angry. It doesn't make me want to cry. It makes me angry. Fuck. Can't they get the people at the top? Like, who knew that $20 million was on the plane? Well, they arrested, of course, two Air Canada employees who, you know, clearly it was an inside job. They knew. But who tipped them off? Okay, this is what we're going to do. Who was planning this whole thing? A lot of the people carried out. And it's the same with the carjackings. And it's kids. It's, you know, teenagers often. And they're pulling out guns to do it. Hey, give me that car or, you know, we'll kill you. And, of course, you surrender your car. And then they find they've been shipped off. And they're only beginning. Every once in a while, they'll crack piece. Hey, guess what? We found 50 cars. Damaged, sorry, but we got them. But the cost of that for insurance, anyway, there is a sadness to just humanity. And I guess people, hey, you got to make a living. How are you going to make a living? I didn't go to school. I flunked out. I can't get a good job. I can steal cars and get a lot of money, and I can get creds, street creds for belonging to a gang and pulling off a heist and I can be somebody, you know, and that's what humans need. I can be somebody. You know, you can do it through your intellect and get a job, be some cushy job working in a big office building or whatever, but look what I can do. And all this talk about living in the now, what could be more living in the now than holding a gun on somebody and stealing their car? That's living in the present, man. That's living for now. That's alive, man. So all this stuff I've been talking about awakening, it's pretty upsetting to think that, hey, these people are awakened, not in the beautiful spiritual love and peace sense, but in the sense of never mind the future, never mind the past. This is now. This is me getting my kicks. Okay. All right. So I think I'm going to stop there and go and take my walk. I think you've heard enough from me for now. And I need the exercise. So this is the Scarborough Dude reaching for the bell, because you got to do the bell. You got to have some consistency in your life. Oh, by the way, I filed my taxes. Okay, here's the little PS part. I knew I had to do my wife's taxes and mine. I thought I could do it online. Okay. I go to CRA and I get a passcode for her, and I have my own passcode and, you know, attached to the bank, and everything's connected, and you got your bank sent and your T4s, and you can get all the other documents right from and go log into your bank. And so I was able to do, or thought I'd be able to do, online, and there's an 8-page form, and it's just question after question, line, you know, 150, line 160, subtract this from that. And then there's a separate form to fill out if you're a resident of Ontario. And I came up with ridiculous numbers, my wife owing a whole lot of money. And as I stared at this thing, trying to remember, wait a minute, do you subtract this from the, which way does it go? That, you add those, no, you subtract, says subtract, which, this, that number, if this number is smaller or bigger, what, oh my God, I don't get it, I don't understand. And I really had a really, really scary moment that, Ken, you've entered the decline. It's not just about forgetting things. Your brain simply doesn't work. You are not capable of filling out an income tax form. You can't do it. You don't understand. You just, and then a little rationalization. Yeah, but I've always had trouble following instructions. I could never go A to Z. I jump around. It's just part of my wiring. I've always talked about that. I'm neurodiverse somehow. Forgive yourself, Ken. No, you're not. And, you know, Nalco's a little worried, I can't do it. And she said, yeah, but there's people at work, and their first language isn't even English, and they're doing their own. They don't have a problem. And I'm feeling really shitty. And the next day, I go online and I look and I go back to the CRA help sign. They said, well, there are some free tax form programs you can get, and it sort of gives you a list if you click the link. And I try to get on one, it won't accept me, and I find one called Wealth Simple, and yeah, it's not accepting that. So I try a different email address. Oh, it accepted me. And I go on, and it says, what do you want to do? And I follow the instructions, and in no time at all, or in a very short time, I have completed and filed both mine and my wife's income tax forms. We are both getting back refunds, not very much, maybe about $500 in total. But I did it. I filled it. They're filed. The government has received them. The job was done. I wasn't so stupid. Everybody uses fucking programs to help them do the taxes. Nobody goes to this 8-page, you know, document and does it by hand except an accountant. That was such a relief. Not only to have done it, but to realize, no, my brain wasn't in decay. You just take an online program and it asks you the right questions and you just give the answers and plug in what you have to. And it works, and it's done, and it's easy. So believe me, that was a huge relief. I am not in such decline. I can still do Wordle, Quirtle, and connections in record time every morning. Scarborough Dude, signing off. Better take my walk. Bye for now.
So, the world seems to be moving further and further toward religious fundamentalism, including in two of the places where you've lived, India, where you're from, and the prime minister there, Modi, is he's Hindu, and the way the country is being run now is very pro-Hindu and kind of anti-Muslim. I haven't really kept up with what the laws are. Mm. And certainly here in the United States, there's, you know, fundamentalist beliefs seem to be becoming more and more a part of the American justice and political system. I'd be interested in hearing your reflections on that.
Well, it's one of the great surprises of my life that religion became such a powerful public force again. Obviously, historically, it has been. But, you know, I'm a child of the 60s. And back then, the 60s and 70s, it would have been absurd to think that we would have to worry about religion. That just wasn't. We could worry about lots of other things. We could worry about the Vietnam War. We could worry about the civil rights movement or whatever it might be. But religion didn't seem to be on the agenda. And then it made this amazing comeback. I don't have a sort of full coherent theory of why that might be. But I do think that one part of it is that we live in a world that is changing at incredible speed and in very radical ways, almost overnight, all the time. A world that people could think of as stable and constant no longer exists. What happens is constant transformation. And I think for quite a few people, that's bewildering and something they find themselves uneasy in. And so maybe they turn towards religion as being a constant and eternal and unchanging thing in a very rapidly changing world. That's one explanation. Another is that it's historically also, not just now, it's always been a great way to create a totalitarian state.
Okay, the counter is on. 6 minutes to go, boys and girls. And here we are, once again, at Thompson Park. It's funny, I just finished my walk. A walk I didn't want to take, but told myself I had to, and did, and glad of it. And only now has the sun come out. But that's okay. Rain or shine. It wasn't raining, but it was cloudy. And anyway, I got things to cover. And one of them is, a shout-out to somebody I've talked about on this podcast before, never fully done him justice, but it is the one and the only Barstool Buddha. My friend who, gosh, lived with us for a short while when we were in Japan. I lived in his apartment during my third year of university. That would have been 1971, I guess. Same apartment building that he and Rod, his roommate, were busted in by the Dorval police. And then when they were released from the station because there was so little hash to be found, went back and discovered the hash that the police and their landlord had overlooked and got high the night they were busted. So that's one of those classic stoner tales. But it's much more than that. That's the same Harold, same apartment where Harold and I, got off to a very tricky trip, which I have talked about before, so I won't go into now, but struggled, you know, and needed each other for support. Harold had just come back from Europe with a Swiss watch, I think, and we hung on to that watch to nail down time because we had no control over space, but you've heard that. Harold is in hospital right now, recovering from major surgery. And I've talked about, you know, the various friends as we get older, times get harder. And it appeared Harold phoned me or FaceTimed me just as the nurse came in or at the end of the call and was wheeling him into the surgery, I believe. He was a little bit high on the morphine. And I was told, Harold was told, they would have to amputate one of his legs. This is part of it anyway. He didn't know how much. Could be anywhere from the foot right up to the hip. And, of course, I don't have any further news since then. He will be heavily sedated and in hospital recovering. And I'm of course, deeply saddened. Harold is somebody I like to look upon as a younger brother. I don't think Harold ever bought into that, but I think I wanted to care for him. He was a few years younger than us, and he was the one who, I would say, has led a very brave life. Turned himself into an expat, because that was the life that he was suited for. It meant he could play golf, he could drink. On the major projects he worked on, like a dam in Laos and so on. And again, this he invented himself as a, I forget the name of the job, but a planner for huge projects and would be hired by foreign companies, a project manager, I guess, of deciding how long it would take to do this, how many trucks you'd need to get this amount of gravel out, and oh my God, very responsible positions. And he would have a driver and a cook and a camp that he lived in for the times he was away. He married a Thai woman, is still married to her. She just had a birthday the other day, Ta. And and this was a lad who was destined to be an aircraft mechanic like his father. You know, he got hired on CP Air. First job was cleaning out the airplanes, and then he became an apprentice. And at some point decided, no, I don't think I want to do this. Went back to school as a 21-year-old with a beer habit and a full beard. Took land surveying, ended up in the north in the town of Atlin, which dips into BC, but you can only get to it from going through the Yukon. In the middle of winter, was at a camp, I guess, doing security at a mining camp. Any number of jobs till we met up with him again in Japan when he showed up with a computer, a fancy device at the time. I think it had an orange screen or something, working for a startup in Singapore, and kind of just leapfrogged from there. Now, that is a journey. That is a journey. You know, he went through an awful lot of money, and now he's down to the last of his savings, paying because he's not covered in any health plan, unfortunately, and is unable to return to Canada. But it's a salute to a man who was brave enough had the balls and the gumption to make his own life. And that is truly admirable, you know, in a world where people so often just want to take the easy way or follow the path that's already been chosen for them. Harold did it his way, literally. And I wish him well. And I'll end on that note. Harold, I love you, man. I got great respect for you. And I sincerely hope that you are soon over this and on the road to recovery and can wean yourself off those heavy-duty meds, because that can be a bitch, man. Scarborough Dude signing out. Bye for now. See you next week from Presque Isle Provincial Park. Bye-bye.